Hey, you're listening to Soundside. I'm Libby Denkman. Let's talk about the power grid. Across the country, it's in need of an overhaul. Our infrastructure is increasingly stressed by growing demand, extreme weather, and just plain aging parts. And in the Puget Sound area, utilities are also ramping up to comply with a state law that will require all electricity to come from clean sources in just over two decades. Joshua Farley has been digging into what this means. He's a reporter for the Kitsap Sun, and he's the author of a new series on electricity in the region. It's called Powering the Peninsula. The series explores where the Kitsap Peninsula's electricity comes from and how it's changing. Hey, Joshua, thanks so much for stopping by Soundside.
Thanks for having me, Libby.
So the Kitsap Peninsula, it's a complex area geographically. You know, from a satellite view, it kind of looks like a jigsaw puzzle that's in the process of coming together. There's islands and land that's broken up by a lot of waterways. I'd imagine that makes energy infrastructure similarly complicated on the peninsula. What are the main sources of energy on the Kitsap Peninsula right now?
Yeah, it is complicated. You're absolutely right. One of the things that makes Kitsap unique, of course, is it is a bit of an island, even though it is a peninsula. And of course, that peninsula is the main highway, if you will, for the transmission lines that come in, the power that comes from all sides of the state. The main power provider for the Kitsap Peninsula is Puget Sound Energy. And it has to basically take that one highway north through Bremerton. Silverdale also goes down south to Port Orchard, continues its journey on all the way, wrapping around through Paulsbow, Kingston, Hansville, and on to Bainbridge Island.
And you have these high transmission lines, right, that carry this power throughout the peninsula. What are the issues that exist right now with that energy grid? What are the problems that people are seeing that are going to need some solutions pretty soon?
Sure. Well, it's getting old. And one thing that I always think is fascinating is if you look at old photos, you know, from 100 years ago, you might see power lines and they don't really look a lot different than what we see today in our infrastructure. And so it's antiquated. And this is nothing new in Western Washington or throughout the country. What is changing is how power is going to be delivered to the grid. Basically, for the past 100 or so years, hydropower has really been the source of power for Washington State and other states too. But we're heavily reliant on that. And every power source comes with its drawbacks. Of course, salmon and fish passage is a big drawback of hydro, but it provides a really constant source of energy. With renewables, particularly wind and solar, the sun doesn't always shine and the wind doesn't always blow. And as we've seen from California, you can have all kinds of power on the grid. The grid can take only so much of that power, but then at night, there's not the power available. And on top of that, Governor Jay Inslee and the state legislature have put big curbs on greenhouse gas emissions for good reason. We're in a climate crisis. And what we're seeing is that the coal plant, for instance, we have one coal plant in the state of Washington down in Centralia. TransAlta operates it. It's going to be completely phased out in 2025. So we're losing some sources of greenhouse gas emitting power. And then at the same time, what are you seeing everywhere? Teslas and electric vehicles. We're starting to see a real uptick and acceleration of those on the market. Still a small percentage, but as that grows, the demand for electricity is surging. And then the supply is also kind of decreasing. And then on top of that, we have this situation with solar and wind not being a constant producer of power. So what are we going to do? And that's really the question, not only for the Kitsap Peninsula, but for our region.
Do you know how much the gap is between the demand and the need for electricity on the peninsula and what the system can currently produce? Has that been quantified?
That's a great question. So it's tricky because essentially we are the sum of all of these sources of power, hydroelectric power. We have, you know, obviously the wind and solar that's been added. For Puget Sound Energy, one thing that people may not realize is that they still draw a ton of their power from greenhouse gases. There's going to have to be a huge sea change for Puget Sound Energy in the next decade and more as they detach from, for instance, a coal plant in Montana that a lot of their power comes from. More than half of their energy comes from that. So they have all these sources of power right now, but where they want to get to, they will lose some of that power, and they'll gain some through renewables as that is built out. But it can be fairly inconsistent at times. Certainly what we see, though, is in the summertime when it's very hot, those ACs are running, so you see a huge demand. And in the wintertime when it's really cold, you're going to have more heating going on. So the bottom line is that our demand on our grid really fluctuates, and it's only going to sort of fluctuate more and more, particularly as people put more use on the grid. But of course, people are also buying their own solar systems, their solar power for their own homes, and so they'll be putting some power on the grid as well. What happens is there's actually an effect. It's known as the duck curve.
The duck curve?
The duck curve,
is that what you said? Like the bird?
Yes, like the bird. The duck curve is basically a way of looking at both supply and demand. And if you were to take all of the supply from, like in California, all of this solar power is coming onto the grid. So it's creating a lift on that curve and wind. But then all of a sudden, you see the supply go down, say at nighttime. And then you overlay also the demand. So when are people using a lot of power? Well, in the middle of the night, probably not so much. But during the evening hours, that's pretty much peak time, right? You're going home, you're having dinner with your family. And so it creates what looks like a duck. And the challenge for utilities as we go into a clean energy economy is how do we smooth that curve out and provide still some constant sources of power. Really, in clean energy, there's not a lot. Nuclear power is one, but it's incredibly expensive, and politically, it has some challenges. I think we can all agree. And hydropower is obviously constant as well, but we're seeing a renewed sense of taking out dams because of what they do to the environment. So you have those challenges as well. We haven't really seen what will be that sort of constant stream source of power that doesn't emit greenhouse gases and also will propel us forward.
You mentioned California. I mean, in that state, you see rolling blackouts when the demand exceeds supply. Is that something that the Kitsap Peninsula is in danger of seeing as well? Have we seen that already?
I think so. When we do see it, I think we don't see it to the degree that California has seen it yet. But what we do see is when we have a windstorm and when we have kind of chaotic weather events, just like this last weekend, we had a windstorm, took out power, obviously, to places that are in more remote areas where there's not what's called looping on your power grid. You don't have a backup. So, you know, we're sitting here in the University District. If power goes out one way, it'll just come in from somewhere else. Well, a lot of places on the Kitsap Peninsula don't have that luxury.
They don't have those redundancies.
Redundancies, exactly. So you have that. The other thing that I think is coming that will be part and parcel with the grid is incredible advancements in battery technology. You know, I don't need to tell you about the fact that the cars today have these incredible batteries in them now that make it possible to both drive fast and for far distances, for longer amounts of time without having to recharge. Well, the same is true for big banks of batteries, and they can actually provide sort of a dampener or a power source downstream towards the neighborhoods of the homes that they're serving. I see in the future probably huge banks of batteries next to most substations. That's probably something we're going to see with lithium ion technology so far down the road.
So we can deposit that energy when it's coming in from the renewables and then withdraw it when we need it.
Exactly.
What's being done right now on the Kitsap Peninsula? I know we're going to talk about banks of batteries in just a minute, but what else is being done to either reduce consumption or make up, you know, in production for the shortfall in our energy supply?
What's being done is, first of all, Puget Sound Energy made a request for bids from companies to say, hey, we're going to need to be changing the way we do things, and we need your help. So what does that look like, whether it's those big banks of batteries or another way of generating power, making the grid more reliable? So interestingly, that's actually what kicked off the series that I started. Was I found out on Yulin Tree Farm, which is a beautiful farm that has hiking trails on it in Kitsap Peninsula. It's also used for mining operations, for gravel, that a company was desiring to set up what's called a biodiesel power plant. And I thought to myself, well, why now? What's the point? And first of all, let's delve into biodiesel. What does that mean to be a biodiesel power plant?
Yeah, tell us, what is that?
Essentially, what it is a byproduct of what is grown in the fields, things like canola and soybeans. that can be used on the flip side. It grows, it absorbs carbon dioxide. So its advocates for biodiesel power plants would say, hey, we can use this on the flip side. And yes, there's some carbon emissions, but essentially the burning of it to turn a turbine and generate electricity will offset those emissions. It is green in the eyes of the state. And sure enough, they are proposing a 200 megawatt plus power plant. Now, this power plant would not be operating all the time. It would be operating when we have those summers and those winters, so those really hot summer days and those really cold winter days. And it would essentially work as a redundancy mostly, but also to supplement the supply of power as we see all these real challenges coming down the pike.
Interesting. So Washington State, just to set the table here, has a law called the Clean Energy Transformation Act that commits the state to having an electricity supply that's free of greenhouse gas emissions by 2045. But what you're saying is, even though this biodiesel plant would be burning fuels in order to turn a turbine to generate electricity, that would still count as a green energy source under the state law?
That's right, Libby. I sought out some experts to talk about this, and sure enough, I was able to confirm that, yes, that is indeed the case. Whereas coal will be done in 2025, natural gas in 2045, this will be able to essentially maintain and continue if it is built.
Tell me about the batteries now, because, of course, we're going to have the ability to store that electricity and call upon it when we need it. Where are we seeing big battery projects getting proposed around the Puget Sound area?
Yeah, great question. So where we've seen this in kind of its infancy is the Snohomish PUD. They have pioneered something called the Arlington microgrid. So I spent some time up there on a very smoky day not long ago when the wildfires were burning at Bull Creek and elsewhere. And what this is essentially it is there is a diesel generator, but there's also some solar panels as well as a giant battery. And the idea there is that it can be isolated. It can function on its own. And again, as we talked about earlier, the whole idea here is that you can generate power from far away, but if we get into that situation where renewables, again, the sun is not shining or the wind's not blowing, down all the way into the neighborhoods of our communities, whether it's on the Kitsap Peninsula or elsewhere, you'll be able to have these batteries that can charge up, be ready to go when the wind is blowing and the sun is shining. And then when it's not, we can draw down the power from those batteries. And the technology, from what I've learned, is so vastly improved. You need only see a Tesla or other kind of vehicle driving around the road to know that we've really turned a corner on lithium ion technology, and it's probably only going to get better in this next decade.
Will the batteries in Snohomish County be able to power a home on the Kitsap Peninsula, or is that going to have to be a locally stored electricity resource that the Kitsap Peninsula develops as well?
I think that will be very local. And yes, I think so. I think it will need to be something that in Kitsap County with Puget Sound Energy or Snohomish PUD or anywhere else that you go, I think that will be something they'll have to develop. It's too limited to transport any of that power over a great distance. We'll still rely heavily on, I think, our state's hydroelectric dams and other power sources. We do have a nuclear power plant in the state of Washington, one, the Columbia Generating Station north of Richland, and it will still be providing a good bulk of the power. But these battery facilities can really start to help to hedge our bets as we move forward in the clean energy economy.
Okay, what does it mean for consumers? When I open my bill at the end of a month, or, you know, when it's somebody on the Kitsap Peninsula opens their bill, what are they going to start to see? I'm assuming that this is a really expensive proposition to totally remake our power grid, and that consumers will be bearing a lot of the costs.
Yeah, it's no question that we're going to see some double-digit increases for folks that are in Puget Sound Energy's area, and I think for anywhere. unfortunately, it's not just as simple as upgrading our power grid. There's a confluence of factors here at play. Obviously, we are living in a time of big increases in the cost of natural gas. The war in Ukraine has been very disruptive to those markets around the world. So the costs are being driven by a variety of factors, but there's no question that what our lawmakers have mandated in terms of controlling those greenhouse gas emissions while also greatly increasing the grid with all of these new electric cars and other technologies, something will have to give.
On your way into the KUOW studios today, you took a ferry from Bremerton. And I understand from your reporting that there is a push to electrify the ferry system down the line. What should people know about that?
That's right. Yeah, I think that's a huge effort. Obviously, again, as part of the governor and the state legislatures really look at how we can reduce greenhouse gas emissions. Ferries, of course, diesel electric boats belch a lot of fuel. On my way over, I was thinking about that. And that's going to be addressed. We're going to see the biggest ferries in the fleet will be converted to hybrid electric. We're also going to see a new fleet of ferries that will start to be built out that will be hybrid electric as well. And that will change the game quite a bit. One thing on our side of the water, on the Kitsap Peninsula side, that will be important is Puget Sound Energy will actually have to create enough power at places like Kingston and Bremerton and Bainbridge Island that they can actually hook in essentially a giant electric plug that will come down all the way, if you can imagine, along the side of the highway, all the way into the ferry terminal loading area and across. They'll have to be able to take this distribution line, and every time a ferry comes in and parks, it will have to plug in, and the charging technology, they're developing it to be on the ferry itself. So that will be just something, as we've all grown accustomed to and taking the ferries. Generally, the people get on, people get off, the cars get on, the cars get off. Soon enough, the ferries will be charged as well as part of that.
What about the Inflation Reduction Act? We know that this is going to be the biggest investment in clean energy infrastructure in U.S. history. Do we have a sense of how that's going to impact Washington State and its electric grid yet?
Well, I think for consumers, there's a lot within the act. Certainly, there are rebates, there are tax credits that will make it easier for you to electrify certain parts of your home. If you're on natural gas, you can convert over to electric units such as heat pumps, and there will certainly be tax incentives for buying more electric cars. But I think that comes back to an increased reliance on our electrical grid. And, you know, sometimes we see on social media, I've seen some attempts at, you know, making memes out of, well, I'm driving a coal-fired battery-powered car. Mm-hmm. You see that sort of thing. And that was something I really wanted to investigate with this series was, well, now, wait a second. You know, if Puget Sound Energy does, in fact, get more than half of their energy production from greenhouse gas emitting coal and natural gas, et cetera, you know, is it still better to buy the electric car? And most people I've talked to on this say, yes, it is. It's still better because there's an efficient way that you're getting the power from the source into your car. And also, what you're doing is the percentage of all of the solar and all of the renewables that are going into the car is only going up. So it will only become better over time. It's still a really worthwhile investment. What we're seeing, though, is there are challenges around purchasing an electric car. They are very expensive. And I'm wondering when we see the arrival of akin to the Model T of the 20th century, what will that look like? What will the electric car that will actually be really affordable for the masses, and how will that impact how PSE and other utilities bring power to the grid as the onslaught continues?
Joshua Farley's new series for the Kitsap Sun is called Powering the Peninsula. I recommend checking it out over on the Kitsap Sun's website. Joshua, thank you very much for stopping by. This has been really fun.
Thank you for having me, Libby.
Thanks for listening to Soundside. Don't forget you can listen live on KUOW 94.9 Seattle at noon and 8 p.m. Monday through Thursday, or anytime right here online at KUOW.org, or, of course, on your favorite podcast app.